In the aftermath of the 1999 Columbine High School massacre, efforts intensified to safeguard children in schools. In Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, that effort was spearheaded by juvenile court judge Mark Civarella, who sent more than 3,000 children to privately owned detention centers, often without legal representation or trial, predominantly for nonviolent transgressions and often for terms ranging up to years in duration. The scandal was termed Kids for Cash when it was learned that Civarella and former President Judge Michael Conahan received some $2.8 million in so-called finder fees from the for-profit centers in return for helping to fill its cells. The film Kids for Cash debuts Friday. Joining me in discussion is its director and producer, Robert May. Robert, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
What strikes one right from the onset is the humanity of this story, the interviews with the victims' parents, and the perpetrators. How were you able to secure that level of trust and friendship?
I think, this is a story with the villain and the victim. And, you know, there's a fine line between good and evil, and we had both. And so I think that the idea was I didn't judge any of these people. I didn't judge the judges. I didn't judge the kids and their families either. And I think I personally have great empathy, and I don't understand why people do certain things. And so I think we created a safe atmosphere and a very lengthy and strategic interview process that allowed people to feel comfortable and talk with us.
You know, the movie is very much set in Luzerne County, and some of the scenes play out in a diner there, and you hear the folks over their coffee and their eggs saying, describing the judge in part, oh, he's a very decent person who just fell into a bad situation.
That's right. It was important. We have this great scene in the movie. This diner, everybody goes there, no matter what your political persuasion, you know, everybody has an opinion there. It's been there forever. And it was sort of an Americana kind of atmosphere where you have these people talking about like the biggest story ever in their town. And, you know, there were people that knew him and liked him and people that knew him and hated him.
How did you gain Civarella's trust that he was able to speak actually so intimately about what he did and where he came from and his groundings as a child?
Well, the approach to Judge Civarella was very simple, really. Like, I felt that the story was one-dimensionally told in the media. It was just so sensational. You know, they took millions of dollars sending kids away, and that was that. And the approach was simple. There has to be two sides to the story, and we want to tell both sides. You know, are you interested in telling both sides of the story? I mean, it was literally that simple.
Some of the canaries in the coal mine who have first alerted the public included radio host Steve Corbett and newspaper reporter Terry Morgan.
Right. There is no voiceover in this movie at all. There's no lower thirds in this movie. And so we wanted the characters, the real characters of the stories to tell their story. But we also needed someone to help guide us. And so we use a great journalist, Terry Morgan, and she's offset by a really great radio show host, Steve Corbett, who's both smart and entertaining, and so he talks about things that you think about but you wouldn't always say. And so it made for a good combination of helping to take us through the story.
No voiceover, but there is type at the end indicating that, in part, the U.S. incarcerates 5 times more children than anywhere else in the world. Very compelling on the face of that.
It is, and the fact is we also incarcerate more adults than any other nation in the world as well. I mean, we have this sense of in society that someone is accused of doing something wrong, indicted or arrested, well, they must be guilty. Happened to the kids, happens to the judges, happens to people generally. Like, we've become a society that we don't tolerate any sort of misbehavior, unless, of course, we're the ones doing it, and then we understand why we did what we did. You know, there are tough consequences we want for everyone who sort of breaks the law. So we put a lot of people in prison. We keep them there. We don't really expect them to be better when they come out, because they're not. We put kids in prisons. And, you know, if we really expect them to be better when they come out, well, then we're kidding ourselves, because when you pull a kid away from their families and their school for their adolescent years, they don't even know who they are when they come out.
In fact, much of the film focuses on the victims themselves, several of the children who speak very eloquently and passionately about their experiences and trying to recover from it, except for the one who ultimately didn't recover.
That's right. I mean, the travesty really is that we take kids who simply need more attention and care and love, and schools need to be more cognizant of this. And when we see a spirited kid, one of the kids we followed had a genius IQ at age 7. And instead of trying to work with him, he was such a spirited kid, you know, the school was more crushing for him and, you know, led him to not know how to deal with certain things. And, you know, he ended up getting in the system.
Who, though, is ultimately culpable when it takes more than 3,000 dots to connect the picture?
We are a society. The people that live in Luzerne County, including me, the people, the lawyers that were in, there's half the kids didn't have lawyers. There was a lawyer in every single hearing. The prosecutor was there. All of the probation officers, all of the various people that all of these kids came in contact with, wouldn't somebody stand up and say, why do we have the zero tolerance for these kids? Like, do these kids do this much bad? Are we kidding ourselves that these kids are better when they come out? Because none of them are. Scared straight programs don't work. But we think they do because we think, you know, okay, you know, it sounds like a good thing. You say there's consequences to a kid. There's consequences for what you do. And here's what they are. And the kid will like, oh, okay, then I won't do it. Except we don't realize that their brain's not even fully developed until they're in their mid-20s. The schools are one of the primary sources of how kids get in the system in the first place.
To what extent did you endeavor in this project as a cautionary tale, both about excesses in the criminal justice system and about this specific systemic abuse?
You know, I don't know, other than to say it's changed. Everybody that's come in contact with the project, it's changed their life and their purview on what they thought justice was. I didn't realize how naive I was prior to this project 4 years ago. I have two teenagers. I've become a completely different parent as a result of this. I think that the effect that the power of understanding the kinds of things that we do to people and kids, you know, out of sight, out of mind. You know, 2/3 of these kids never go back to school after they've been incarcerated. Do we know? No. Do we care? Most people don't.
To the extent that Ground Zero was Judge Civarella's courtroom, it then exploded in so many directions. I'm curious about what pre-production work went into assembling this project.
Well, really trying to understand, Judge Civarella ran on a platform of zero tolerance. He ran on a platform of, you know, you do an adult crime, you'll do adult time, whatever that meant.
But he also told those parents of the children, you don't know how to parent, I will assume that responsibility.
Right.
There was a hubris to that.
There was. And he went around to the schools, too, and he had a speaking engagement list long every year. And he went around to the schools and he said, listen, if you do something in school and come before me, I will put you away. And schools would invite him over and over and over again. This was a very celebrated guy in the community. He was reelected for 2 10-year terms.
Perhaps that's how he was able to sleep at night, tell himself, I told you so, and therefore you violated what I set up initially. I wasn't surprising you.
Well, I mean, you know, if you have someone who's constantly telling him he's doing such a great job and people are going along with it, how would he know any different? You know, theoretically, how would he know any different? I think that when no one, why don't people question lots of things they see that are wrong? I don't know. I don't know the psychology to that because perhaps they didn't think it was wrong. They thought it was great to have zero tolerance until there was money involved. School, police, parents, everybody thought it was great. Then they found out there was millions of dollars that exchanged hands. And they're like, well, hang on. Maybe the way we're treating the kids isn't so good. Doesn't that sound like hypocrisy?
What's the psychology of those who have viewed this film so far in pre-screenings? What have you observed?
Well, I've quoted a couple of times some of the reviews, because like the Hollywood Reporter, they call it riveting and it's a thriller that rivals most fiction films.
You don't hear those kind of attributions for most documentaries.
You don't. We don't even call it a documentary. We call it a nonfiction film because, you know, it's like their documentary sounds to an audience like it's a film that documents certain things and all that. That's not what this is. This is a nonfiction film that goes deep with characters. There's a story arc, you know, there's a beginning, middle, and end to these stories, and it's very compelling. And you know, the kind of reaction we've received both from audiences and critics has been overwhelming for us because the film plays like a thriller. Kerry Rickey's review called it a horror movie. That's right. That's the kind of movie it is. And the idea of the entertainment comes, you know, from the scandal in large part, from beginning to end. The scandal's alive from the first frame to the last frame of the film. And people don't expect to see what they see once they get into theater. And that's one of the reasons why even the end credits, the theaters don't bring up the lights until the credits are well rolling, because we've experienced in screenings that audiences just sit there. And it's been called a punch in the gut at the end because it has a pretty powerful ending. And, you know, like, so you know, we're grateful for that because I think it's the only way that people can take notice of the way that they think they always know how to judge people. This, I think, turns all that on its head.
Luzerne County, certainly, and our region as well. To what extent now, years on, do you still think it's in the national consciousness, this specific story?
I think it's just beginning to get into the national context because I think that people thought it was an anomaly. You know, I think they thought, oh, well, you know, these judges took this money and treated these kids that way, and that's that. But we've been screening all over the country. I mean, in pre-release screenings, we've been in Chicago, we've been in Omaha and Los Angeles and Boston and Florida and Washington, D.C. multiple times. And people see it and they're like, oh, my God, that could be happening right here. We had a judge who saw it in Washington who came up to me afterwards and said, I've done all that. I just haven't taken any money.
Are parts of it too scary for young children?
No, I don't think so. In fact, there are lots of folks that feel like middle school, high school kids should see this film. Certainly teachers and superintendents and principals need to see this film. You know, prior to Columbine, juvenile crime was dropping for 2 years in a row and continued to drop consistently right up to now. But school-based arrest alone in Pennsylvania rose by 300%.
And again, why? In this situation, it was for primarily inordinately nonviolent transgressions.
Well, most kids are arrested for that. You're right. Exactly. And we just assume because of the violence we see on television and in media that, you know, kids, there are violent kids positively. They are the absolute minority of all kids that are arrested for anything. But society feels like, oh, gosh, I could send my kid to school. They may not come back from one of the school, you know, one of their schoolmates, if you will, perhaps would bring a gun to school and shoot them or something.
So that inordinate fear becomes the pretext for a vast overreaction.
Exactly right. And, you know, we no longer have a compass as far as, you know, where's this line? How far do we go? I mean, kids who commit violent acts certainly need very special attention and care. Kids who commit nonviolent acts need a different kind of care. Taking away from their families and schools for their entire adolescence isn't a good way to deal with those kids.
You have two adolescents in school. Have they seen a screening yet?
They've seen the film many, many, many times, I have to say. And, you know, the very first time they saw the film, you know, as we were completing it, which was a long time ago, and I sat in the back of the room when they were watching it and kind of watched their body language to see if it could hold their attention, and it did. And, like, I thought, okay, this is cool. Because no matter what, I might be their dad, but, you know, they're not going to sit there for however long and just, like, pretend.
They're not going to humor dad.
And definitely the opposite. They were like, what is this, dad? But, no, I think they I really do. I think they find it very compelling as well, and they've seen it a multiple times.
Robert May is the director-producer of Kids for Cash. It debuts Friday in Philadelphia.